Welcome to the Deuce. I'm Brad.
And I'm Jeremy.
And today we're doing the second of our patriotic movies, episode 14. We decided for the 4th of July, we would do Independence Day Resurgence, the second in the Independence Day series.
Yes, yeah, correct? It's...
Or we tried.
It was a rough one.
It was a rough, but you know what? You take the good, you take the bad, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You take them both, and there you have a bunch of Roland Emmerich films. But you know what? Before we get started, we just want to take a quick moment to say there are so many great podcasts out there.
True.
That we know you have the opportunity to listen to. We thank you for listening to ours, but if you're looking for some others, you know, try some of these out. Don't take our word for it.
Do you desire to add yet another entry in the endless legion of film review podcasts to your playlist? Can you not stand the thought of having any moment of your dull, pointless waking life intruded upon with the sounds from the real world, and would prefer to listen to a small cast of assholes talk about movies? Then
they must be destroyed on sight!
Probably meets your bare minimum requirements. Join Lee Russell, Daniel Harper, Paul Romali, and the odd guest hosts as they talk about films from every genre, ranging from the obscure and schlocky to the well-known top-dollar classics. Look for
They Must Be Destroyed on Sight
on iTunes, Podbean, YouTube, and Facebook. That's
They Must Be Destroyed on Sight.
And we're back.
We are back.
We are. And we're about ready to drop the deuce on one Independence Day Resurgence. A wonderful, wonderful movie that... This is one of Jeremy's favorite movies, I swear.
Favorite. All-time favorite.
Sarcasm. Go ahead. You were going to say some stuff about the movie, weren't you? About how they had to stop, like, for the budget reasons. Oh, so you didn't have enough money.
Yeah, they this thing had some major development issues. I know that I remember getting updates on like how the progress of the movie was going.
For real?
Yeah, because there was a guy who I worked with who loved Independence Day. Like, he loved the first one.
For most people, this is a classic. People love this movie.
Well, he loved the first one, and of course I was like, when's the last time you've seen it? He said, you know, it's been a little while, but I remember loving it, so...
You remember loving it.
Correct, yeah, which is how a lot of times how those nostalgia films go.
Right.
So, he was so excited for it that he kept telling me all the updates, and like every time he was worried about a change or wasn't, or, you know... Like, he had heard, there's a couple times, at least one time, I don't remember, that the production actually shut down for a period.
That's
because
crazy.
They ran out of money and had to get more financing.
Is that
to keep
because
it going.
Of, like, Jeff Gold, like, his waxing his eyebrows?
Jeff Goldblum's eyebrows?
Yeah, like, all the that money is, that went to that?
That is a pretty big budget item. Thor Ragnarok had the same problem.
Yes, it did. Yes, I'm sure it did.
But by the way, second movie that I can think of,
Hemsworth,
with a Hemsworth Goldblum combo in it.
Didn't even think about that until right now. All right.
Nor did I, because I live for the
because
inane
we didn't
trivia.
We never thought we'd watch this movie.
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Now a lot of people like this is a movie that catapulted Will Smith into further. You know, he was more of a sitcom star.
Yeah.
Then this movie came out, and then, you know, Men in Black. Was this before Men in Black? I think it was.
It right
just
before
it catapulted
Men in Black.
Him into being a star.
Yeah, like, more action.
More
kind of
action.
Things,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I don't know why I said that. I think because he's not coming back. He said he'll come. He was going to come back.
Well, okay. So the original thought behind this.
Oh, no, there was no thought behind any of this.
The original thought behind it, or semblance, or, you know, at least the appearance of thought behind it, was they said they were going to film the second and the third movies back to back.
Oh, like a Back to the Future kind of thing?
Yeah, like Back to the Future 2 and 3, okay. Or Matrix Reloaded and
The other one.
Unloaded. I don't remember what the major Revolutions okay. or whatever it was called. Anyway. They were gonna do like the back to back thing like that. So they wanted to get all this major financing for it. Of course they didn't have enough money to get through the first one even. But
right.
But in order to sign on for this two movie deal, Will Smith wanted $50 million, which was a pretty significant portion of their budget. Lot. Yeah. Seriously though, if they think of it like this movie, I mean the visuals are fine. The visuals are good.
In this movie?
Yeah, they're okay.
No, I don't like them too much.
They're not the greatest, no. But they weren't bad by
no,
any
they're
means.
Not bad. They could be worse.
Yeah, but they weren't the greatest. But I mean, think about how they would have looked if they had to that much of their budget had to go to Will Smith.
Yeah.
It would have been like the graphics from that knockoff movie, Independence War Insurgents.
Wait, what?
Independence War Insurgents.
There's a knockoff movie?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Like aliens versus hunters and transmorphers and things like that.
I think I probably would have liked that better.
Independence War Insurgents looks terrible.
But this is Resurgence. And but it's this is Independence Resurgence. Day Resurgence.
Yes.
And so, you know what? Let's drop the deuce.
Let's drop it.
Dropping. We should have like a little thing that drops something there. Anyway, go ahead.
Drops just a literal deuce on
them. No, I don't want to like gross out our listeners. Stop. Don't do that.
Anyway. Okay, so we start off the movie flying through space. Hearing radio signals from President Whitmore, Bill Pullman's speech in 1996.
And this was before any scene was shown to us.
Right.
That just goes in your head right away.
Right. Straight there. Just remember the movie.
Yeah. No, so, but that's, you know, go ahead.
But it's his post-invasion address from
it's the most famous
movie.
Speech that's from Independence Day. It's what most people think about, besides Will Smith.
Right.
Punching an alien.
Correct. Which is fine. Like, I'm a little bit better with this kind of opening. And we've talked about this before with, some of, like, the opening expository dialogue that instead of saying, here's where your people are, like Major League did, where it just tells you everything.
Well, it goes on forever for way too long.
Yeah. And this one kind of, we've talked about this. I like this technique better where they just show like a TV address or like a something else that kind of tells you without it really like saying specifically last time on Independence Day kind of a thing. But we see the transmission going or see space flying by as the transmission's going. And we come across some sort of like alien ship on a planet. And you see something flashing on the screen, and this alien just, like, screams and smashes a bunch of things, and then the ship takes off. I think the alien was mostly pissed about having to listen to this cheesy soliloquy from the first movie about the human spirit and the determination and all that.
Yeah,
so
sure.
It takes off, and we assume it's heading our direction, so...
End of movie.
Correct. That's it.
I hope, right? No?
Yes.
No, there's
where
more?
Where I fell asleep.
Oh, God.
So now we come to a puffy, bearded President Whitmore who is waking up from a nightmare. Nightmare.
Yeah. While you were sleeping, Bill Pullman wakes up from what I assume is a nightmare. Yet, come on, dude. It was like his greatest hit from the last movie.
Yeah.
So that's not much of a nightmare.
No.
It's like playing your greatest hit, you know? It's like Rick Springfield playing Jesse's, you know, girl in his head, like, over and over again while he's sleeping.
So he wakes up, and he has a cane, and you can tell he's kind of, like, out of it. Yeah, and his beard.
And also facial hair.
Obviously, he's been disheveled. But he has these, like, drawings of circles with a line through them. That he's been, I guess, drawing with the spirograph over and over.
The spirograph that you got when you were younger?
Yeah.
Spirographs. Those were amazing.
God, those things were awesome.
I think we could talk about another hour about those toys.
Independence Day, Spirograph.
Yeah, they should have. They should have done that.
Spirograph resurgence.
Oh yeah, Let's talk about that for another hour.
The giant red gear one, the best. Anyway.
I guess we got to talk about this movie instead.
Oh yeah. So we do get a little bit of expository dialogue, from President Lanford.
Whoa.
Played by
President Lanford was her name, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Played by
Isn't that where Roseanne lived? She lived in Lanford?
I think so.
Yeah, they lived in Lanford.
Must be where they got it. President Lanford, played by Cela Ward.
Cela Ward.
Oh my god,
who you said always has that Cela Ward hair.
Yeah.
It's and like always sculpted like that. Like perfect.
And they were like Cela Ward's like, what's a character I have to do? President? All right, let me get in character. I'm the president.
That's like the extent of her like training.
Yeah, she has one thing. And so she's basically talking about how since the war of 1996, there have been no major human military conflicts that we banded together as like a world to fight a common enemy. We've also learn to adapt the alien technology to advance our own, which is convenient because it explains why we see a flying car go by.
Yeah, there's flying. It's not a bunch of flying cars. It's like a flying car going in.
Yeah.
There's a train that's going really fast. Our technology has gotten
a little bit more advanced,
but not to the point where it's like overwhelming us.
Yeah, not ridiculous. Right. Where it's like we've advanced millions of years. It's like obviously. It's like our technology advanced by a few more years than it is in our current timeline.
Right.
So.
Right. Except in Montana, where it doesn't.
No. Or in Indiana, where things go backwards.
Where they're still stuck in 1963.
They wish. So we see a young officer going to see President Lanford. And there's this portrait of Will Smith on the wall, like in his flight suit from the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have to remind you, Will Smith was part of this.
Was part of this, but he's not in this.
But where is he? How are they going to explain it? He's a major character. But you see him there. The young officer goes in, and they address him as Captain Hiller. So this is Dylan Hiller, the little boy from the first movie. So it's Will Smith and Vivica A. Fox's son from the first one.
Sure.
So now we're going to use him as our central character.
Well, why not? Go for it.
And the girl who wrote the speech for President Lanford and who now is talking with Dylan is Patricia Whitmore.
Patty Whitmore.
Yeah, so it's the president's daughter. There is also, I remember there was some like hubbub about they replaced like some of the kid actors from the first movie still are active and like acting, including the girl who played Patty Whitmore.
And they're like, who played her in this one? I can't remember
what her name is.
I don't know. Generic-y.
I thought she was the girl from The 100, but I might be wrong.
No. What girl from The 100? Which one?
Like the blonde girl from The 100.
No, not even close.
You don't think so?
Okay. No.
Anyway, but she...
I don't know why I got so excited about that. No, not even close.
Dylan and Patricia, obviously they're friends, and so they catch up a little bit, and Dylan says he's going to be going up to, going to whatever base. Patricia says, you know, go easy on Jake when you get up there.
Oh, you meant like, okay, never mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's Roland Emmerich, I just thought.
Oh, well, you know. So we see now Jake Morrison, played by Liam Hemsworth, on a moon base piloting a space tugboat moving a space weapon to the space base. The weapon starts to fall. So like they try to set it up, but it kind of comes apart. It starts falling, and Jake catches it with his ship. So then we have Commander Jiang, who's just like pissed that he saved everyone's life for some reason.
Oh, the president's daughter is played by Maika Monroe. I don't know. She was in It Follows, if that helps.
It doesn't.
Anyway. Doesn't for me, but I think for some people it does.
Yeah, it probably would. So she's from Micah Monroe's from It Follows. There you go. So Commander Chang, he's pissed that Jake has saved everybody's lives. And, yeah. So he goes back to the Ace of Space base and Parks. So now we're getting into this Roland Emmerich, like, he loves cutting between like 18 different stories.
Right. It's story A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, whole alphabet.
And new stories get added for no reason. All the time in the middle of the
movie. Well, you'll find out.
So now we cut to Area 51, which is now the Earth Space Defense headquarters. So they bring in General Adams, who's played by William Fichtner, who is told that all the aliens who they have captured from 20 years ago, held in these cells, that they are just going nuts.
I don't trust this guy, because he was in that TV show Invasion, where he was an alien himself.
Yeah, so...
So I went in going, no, I don't think so. But he's a good guy in this.
Yes. So... Now we flash to in Central Africa.
I bless the rains down in Central Africa.
There's a UN research mission, which is led by director now, David Levinson, played by Jeff Goldblum.
Jeff Goldblum.
So he became the director of the UN, or the director of whatever this project is. They're meeting with
I don't even think we have a name for the project, do we?
I don't know. Yeah, Project Nostalgia.
Mm-hmm. Sure. We'll call it that.
So
there was a lot of like things in this movie where like that happened, where it was like they were just spouting out words and we're supposed to just believe them.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
So
Project Harmony, Alien Trend, whatever. I don't know. You know?
Yes.
Okay, good.
So we're meeting with he's basically going to meet with a warlord named Dikembe Dumbutu.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, who's played by Diobia.
You didn't butcher that at all.
Diobia Operai.
Yeah.
So the soldiers, they come across these soldiers, and the soldiers are actually armed with, like, alien weapons. And of course, this is all happening against the hilarious backdrop of, this accountant named Floyd who's trying to like audit him at the same
what
time.
What did I say? He looks like a combination between Judd Nelson and John Oliver.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate for Judd this guy. Oliver. Yeah. Yep, that's him. So while they get there, they meet a psychologist named Catherine Marceau, played by Charlotte Gainsbourg, I think it is. They talk about how these rebels basically fought the aliens for 10 years.
Right.
So
yeah.
The other alien ships all came down, killing the aliens and everything. But this ship had landed, and because it landed, the aliens actually got out and were fighting. So the people in this nation had been fighting the aliens by hand for years, so they learned all these things about them.
Right, and don't they have like this energy between them?
Yeah, they
psychic energy.
Yeah, she talks about like the people who have been fighting these aliens and who have really been in contact with them. The longer you're in contact with them, you have this stronger link. It's known as alien psychic residual condition.
Yeah, or I like to call them DN Warlord Warwick.
Mm-hmm. They all have APRC, and so this is like the strongest place it is. I don't want to say the whole name.
Fine.
So it's the strongest it is anywhere because they've been fighting them for so long.
Yeah.
So, and they actually talk about how like they've learned the language. Because they, you know, they were being hunted, so they had to learn how to hunt them back. So they learned how to read the alien language, conveniently.
Yeah.
And they also learned, and as they will repeat many times throughout the movie, their weak spot is in their back.
And our weak spot was watching this movie.
Yeah. Correct.
It's a lot of like, hey, this will help the plot along, conveniently help the plot along. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's just setting them up too easy to knock it down.
Right.
Pretty much.
Right.
Right?
So this ship, because it was the only ship that actually landed in the first invasion, that ship is still sitting in this warlord's territory because it didn't crash land. It turns out it had been drilling to the center, or drilling into the ground all along, although they never knew why. And 2 days ago, the lights came back on in the ship. So they managed to get inside, and they realize it's been sending out a distress signal. It's the last remaining ship sending out a distress signal, calling the other aliens back to it. So we now flash back to Jake, who is talking to his girlfriend, Patty Whitmore.
Ooh,
on a video conference.
Jake and Patty. Right there on a video, like kind of a Skype-esque kind of thing.
Yeah.
I forget what they called it, but we'll call it Moon Skype.
Moon Skype, yeah.
Moon Skype.
Yeah, that sounds right. So turns out Jake has some sort of a beef with Dylan. And we see this picture where it's, I think it's on Patty's desk, where it's Jake, Dylan, and Patty all in flight suits. So obviously they all used to be buddies. And we cut to the International Legacy Squadron being recognized.
Yeah. Great good name. For you guys.
The ILS.
You finally made it on the ILS.
And they are led by Captain Hillard.
Of course they are.
So we learn.
And some Chinese girl, too. Don't forget about her.
Yeah, that's Zhang.
Yeah.
Zhang. She's in there.
Yeah.
And that is actually the moon cap or the moon commander's daughter.
Sure. Yeah. No, I thought uncle.
Or uncle?
Yeah.
I thought
they were uncle.
I don't
Does
know.
Does it really matter?
No. Her. She's related to the moon commander.
She's related to the moon captain. I'm related to a moon captain. Moon captain.
The popular song from Independence Day resurgence. I'm related to a moon captain.
All right.
Okay.
Cat Stevens, great song. Moon Captain.
Okay. So this is where we finally address Will Smith.
Oh, yeah.
Outside of like one of the many, many pictures we keep showing.
Yeah. They really want you to remember
you
Will Smith.
Will Smith was part of this.
Hey, remember? Fresh Prince.
So we learn that Will Smith died in a test flight for these like updated fighters. So they just had him punking
ass
out, and now just dying in a crash.
Jesus! After all, he survived.
Yeah, right.
It's like, oh,
and they, you know, whatever. They say, oh, you do your father proud and all that stuff.
You do your. That was a great Celia Ward impression, by the way. You
Thank
do
you.
Your father proud.
You do your father proud. I'm Celia Ward. Look at my hair.
Kind of sound like Kate Mulgrew instead of Celia Ward, but
I know it's true.
By Mrs. Columbo.
So now Jasmine Hiller, played by Vivica A. Fox.
Jasmine Hiller, that's like my favorite incense. Jasmine Hiller.
that's awfully savory. What is that? Jasmine Hiller.
What are you getting in the when people don't smoke, they have those one things. What are those called?
The vape.
The vapes.
Yeah.
Oh, can I get that in Jasmine Hiller? Go ahead. Flavor. Or it's just bad acting.
Correct. It's played by Vivica A. Fox, of course. But turns out she was a stripper in the first movie, or exotic dancer, excuse me.
Yeah, she was,
in the
right?
first movie.
And
but
somehow
I think she
she's...
was going to school. I thought she was going to school, too.
To be a doctor? Because
yeah,
that's what
I
she
think
is
so.
In this movie.
Yeah, I think
right.
so.
Yeah.
So she made her way through it
so
or whatever.
So she made it through it. She shook her way through it.
Yep, so she is now a doctor.
Yeah, respected
and
doctor.
She calls Dylan and says she starts getting on his case about if he's going to be flying, you have to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know... Sometimes parents just don't understand.
Oh, my God.
Boom.
Oh, my God.
Cha-cha.
Well, anyway.
So anyway,
that's a joke I do. I'm surprised I didn't write that down. Go ahead.
I know. I was like, I was waiting for you to beat me to the punch.
I didn't do any Will Smith jokes.
Really?
Yeah, no.
So the ILS is flying to the moon base and says permission to land, to which Commander Jang replies, "Welcome to the moon, Captain." And I don't know why, but it just made me crack up. It's so cheesy.
Oh, it's very cheesy.
So when they get there, all the moon crew, they're basically acting like these fanboys and girls waiting to go. These people are like rock stars. So they're right. They want to go there and get their autographs. Mm-hmm. So they all surround Dylan and his crew, and they're getting stuff signed. And we cut to Jake ordering moon milk.
A moon scene. Milk.
He pulls up this menu and it says moon milk.
Right.
And he orders it.
And I put moon milk. One giant curd for mankind. It's probably their slogan. I'm just assuming.
Yes.
So moon milk.
Yeah.
So probably. I just kept on putting like moon in front of everything. So it's like moon milk, moon Skype. Like it's just like it's got to be. It's not what it is, but I'm thinking Roland Emmerich. I could probably write this scene better than you. Here you probably. Go, moon milk.
So Jake is talking to his friend.
I think you can get moon milk at Whole Foods, by the way.
Moon milk?
Yeah.
God, I hope so.
I hope so too.
I hope so.
Yum.
I can't remember what his.
It's out of this world.
Oh my God, I can't remember what his friend's name is.
Who cares?
So Jake is talking to his buddy. Who's his buddy. Like,
we'll call him Buddy.
Buddy. He's talking to Buddy.
Buddy,
his
Buddy.
Co-pilot. Yeah. On his like space tugboat. And he says, uh-oh, Dylan's right behind me, isn't he? And so there's, you see Dylan just like standing there. And obviously they have this beef. So Jake goes up to talk to him, and Dylan just hits him and knocks him to the ground. So which prompts Jake, of course, like the commander asks what's going on, and Jake says, "Floors are slippery. I just fell, of course." And he goes back to his quarters.
Is his name Charlie? Is that his name? Who cares? So. Buddy.
Yeah. So he goes back to his quarters, and he watches this video
right
of this almost deadly accident that he had. Yeah, I don't know why he like was allowed to keep this or why he's watching it or what. But
yeah, why are you watching your worst hits ever?
Yeah, right. Basically, he was hot-dogging it in some sort of formation and almost
during
took,
training.
Yeah, and almost took Dylan out.
Yeah, why are you reliving your mistakes on MoonTube?
Yeah, right.
I just assume it's called MoonTube.
It's probably accurate. Damn it, MoonTube.
Pulling stuff up on MoonTube.
That MoonTube lets me play copyrighted material. Anyway. We've since evolved as a species.
MoonTube will let you play Pink Floyd.
The dark side of the MoonTube.
Yes, it will. Which I feel like this is. Okay.
Let's see. So he talks to his buddy. Oh, God, I really like blanks where that name should
it's
be.
It's fine. It's fine.
So he talks to his buddy about, hey, you know, he was an orphan, and he was just trying to make his parents proud, which is why he was trying to hot dog it. And so his bromantic buddy, because I couldn't think of his name.
That's fine.
So he and his bromantic buddy.
He's 23 and a half. He made sure to let us know he was 23 and a half.
Yeah, because when you're 23, you start counting the halves still.
I do.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Buddy says...
By the way, do you think that was 2% moon milk? I'm just assuming it was. 1%, whole percent moon milk?
I don't... You know what? I don't think we go by those percentages anymore.
Not on the moon?
No, not on the moon.
Yeah.
I think it's like 4%.
Do you think it's kind of like OJ?
13.5%.
Like it's crater-free? Like pulp-free?
Yes.
Like moon milk?
I think it is.
I don't know why I'm fascinated by the moon milk. Probably because the rest of the movie is shit. Probably.
Yes.
For the most part.
Right.
Okay, go ahead.
That sounds about right. Now with vitamin Q. Damn moon milk. So now we flash to a hospital.
Jesus, we're flashing everywhere.
Yeah, we are.
We're more flashes than Vivica A. Fox in the first movie.
Dr. Brackish Oaken.
Yes.
Yeah, played by Brent Spiner.
Mm-hmm.
He's laying in a coma.
From Generation, another generation. Yeah.
Yeah.
From Star Trek.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So he's
which we thought he was dead in the first one.
Yeah, I thought the alien killed him in the first one. But it turns out apparently he didn't. And just
put him,
left
in, a
him
coma?
In a coma.
Put him in
somehow.
A coma.
Yeah. Yeah. And so his this other scientist is there with him and is taking care of him. And so not sure about
we're not
this.
Sure. Throughout the movie they kept calling each other baby.
Yeah, I think they're I think that's supposed to be his partner.
Okay. That's what we thought. I thought maybe like he was also a driver, like baby driver.
Yeah.
They,
that's
they
why.
Had like, you know, nicknames. Mm-hmm. Hey, baby.
And both their nickname is baby.
Yeah, both of them were like baby.
And
yeah.
One of them just brings orchids to
yes,
the other one all the time.
That's how they do it. They bring orchids. That's how they steal money from banks. By the way, go see Baby Driver.
Go see
in theaters now. Okay. Enough
anyway,
of that plug.
Anyway, we thought he was dead, but apparently he's not. But all of a sudden, Dr. Oaken wakes up from this coma and is just like screaming. And says, oh, they're coming. At the same time, in Roswell, now we flash back to Roswell.
There we go.
Or to Area 51. they say the general is there, and General Adams, and they say the Saturn Defense Base has disappeared. And something as big has been basically pulling at Saturn's moons. In Africa, we flash back there, and Marceau tells Levinson that this circle with a line appears in the same one that we saw with President
mm-hmm.
Whitmore,
mm-hmm.
appears in a lot of APRC sufferers' dreams. And she shows even it happened back with, like, Roswell during the original alien ship crash.
Mm-hmm.
So now we flash again to the moon. Seriously, he just keeps mm-hmm. jumping. He has ADHD. Seriously. So a portal opens up by the moon, and a ship comes through. Levinson and the president jump on a big conference with everybody.
I think they're on Moon Tube. Are they on Moon Tube? Or
Moon
Skype?
Moon Skype?
Moon
Skype? Skype.
Yeah.
They are on
Moon Skype? Skype. Just say Moon Skype.
They're on Moon WebEx. And the president, basically the general, urges an attack. Some of the other, this World Council, they also vote for attack, and the president approves it and says, you know, let's do this. Levinson says, I don't think this is the same ship as the other thing. This looks different than the other ships we've
right.
seen. I don't think this is one of theirs. And they say, yeah, we'll sort it all out.
Yeah, whatever, blow it up, we'll do
and
it
so
later.
So they just fire, and of course blows a hole through the ship, and it kind of flies off and crashes in a crater. Whitmore all of a sudden starts getting flashes and says that was not the enemy. They just, of course, urge him to take his meds, which is fine.
Crazy Pullman.
Yes. And so in Africa, D'Ambuntu basically gears up for the battle. Jake all of a sudden like walks into the where all the ships are. And says, you know, everybody out, I'm taking off. And so they take this tug and fly away.
Right.
So he flies all the way to Earth, picks up Levinson, Marceau. I just call him Floyd the Auditor.
That's fine. Floyd the Auditor.
And D'Ambuntu.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to go investigate the ship. And so they fly all the way back to the moon. And that's when they, of course, David Levinson in the first one did not like flying or the heights or whatever.
Yeah.
And so.
So Jake puts it in fusion drive.
Yeah, he says it's not so bad this time. He goes, I haven't even put it in fusion drive yet. And then he sets it to fusion drive. And can you reenact?
Jeff Goldblum?
Yeah.
No, seriously, that was probably inflection.
It was probably, yeah. It was about, it was flat. It was phoned
oh,
in.
So bad. It was like he was phoning it in that day. And when I mean that day, I mean the whole time he was in this movie, for the most part.
Yeah.
He's not as, like, fun and cheesy as he was in the first movie,
Yeah.
Like, a lot of, like, scenes that I kind of really did like was between Jeff Goldblum and his father.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? How fun that was?
Yeah.
And this, they kind of separate them.
Yeah, yeah. And it's weird. It's, they don't know what to do
right
with Judd Hirsch in this movie.
Right.
I feel like he wasn't in it, and then they were trying to cram him in desperately.
So this, and then Judd Hirsch came along and said, "Hey, are you doing that movie? Are you doing
that movie? So this movie was actually written by four people, and I know that people contribute and things like that, but I feel like they each wrote a part and then just tried to cram it together, because there were things also that didn't quite match up. So we have this weird scene all of a sudden where Judd Hirsch is on a book tour about this, he wrote this book about helping to save the world, but he's like in a senior, like, living retirement home.
Yeah, no.
And just trying to hawk this book.
Again, this is like 30 minutes into the movie, we are introducing more characters.
Yeah. So we get this thing about the, where he's at the senior living center, and then scene over. No importance to do with that. And really, it's like, okay, what are you trying to prove by even showing Judd Hirsch there? Like, it made no sense. But we cut back to Virginia now. Patty Whitmore goes to check on her dad, and she's pissed when she finds he's escaped with the old pillows under the blanket shaped like a person trick.
Yeah.
It's the dumbest thing.
Yeah.
And so I was like, cracked up, because she goes, "Dad, it's time to get up." And she goes, "Dad?" And then pulls back blankets and it's just pillows.
You learned that from the first George Bush.
President Lanford is holding a rally to honor Robert Loggia's character from the first movie. For his service during the War of 1996.
Now, Robert Loggia died in 2015.
Yes.
Right. And so this was pretty much his last movie, I would say.
Yeah. I don't know if he was supposed to have more of a role or not, but like...
I don't know.
This was his last on-screen... I think it was his last on-screen appearance.
In fact, the credits dedicate this movie to him.
I'm sorry, Robert Loggia.
Yeah, I'm sorry, too. You should not have gone out like that. But
yeah, this should not have been your dedication movie.
No.
R.I.P. Robert Loggia.
Mm-hmm.
But we got to see him for a moment, all decorated and receiving some accolades. So now we flip back to the moon, where they check they're arriving at the wreckage, and they're checking, and they see the circle with a line through it again. So we see it, and they were like, okay, well, let's see if we can get this out of here. Like, we need to figure out what this is. And then all of a sudden, people all over with that APRC start getting these massive headaches, including President Whitmore, who's managed to wander his way on the stage during the
celebration.
During the award ceremony. Yeah. At this point, it's July 4th, 2016, so it's 20 years after the original. So
right. Coincident.
Yeah. So this massive ship start like decloaks and starts taking out debris in its way. So everything is just kind of getting sucked into its gravity as it's
flying.
Right,
the gravity is all weird.
Yeah, so on the
moon... A lot of this I don't understand.
Well, at first you don't see the severity of it, but like on the moon it's mostly like debris from the original mothership.
Yeah.
And like just dust and whatever getting sucked up to it. So the Earth Space Defense, when they see it, they start telling everybody to evacuate and take shelter because there's something on its way. On the moon, they make it back inside the spaceship, the space tugboat, and Jake's tug grabs the crushed alien ship and starts basically trying to get away from it.
Mm-hmm.
But it gets caught up in its gravity of this other thing, so they're kind of dragged along for the ride. The space base uses its space laser.
Space base, space laser.
Which does space nothing to it. basically, it just kind of hits its shield and that's it. So
think if there's a lot of space that was in between Roland Emmerich's head when he was making this movie.
the ship, the mothership, whatever, blows up the moon base.
Right.
Just fires
so
on it.
So thank God all of our main characters that were introduced got off the moon beforehand.
Oh, yeah.
That
it's was great. Convenient. Everybody who had a name, except for Commander Zhang, got out of there. But, of course, Commander Zhang gets blown up, and his daughter, niece, whatever, is, of course, upset.
Daughter, niece.
And she's in a ship, because everybody else is scrambles. Like, Dylan, Zhang, and whoever else, the rest of the ILS forces have scrambled their fighters in an attempt to take it down, which they aren't able to.
If all this sounds boring, it's because it is.
Yes. So at this point, it's going pretty damn slow.
Right.
So the president authorizes the orbital defense system to take down the mothership. So it's all these satellites around Earth, and you see them kind of position themselves and start, like, arming these lasers to fire a series of shots at the mothership, hoping to take it down. But before it can fire, the mothership just blows them all up. And so we're not faring too well so far.
Is the movie.
So President Lanford is going to Cheyenne Mountain, which is her hideaway, while they try to sort this out. So it's like a second base. Patty asks her to take the president with her, President Whitmore with her, and she agrees. But he doesn't want to because he wants to help Patty, so he goes to Area 51 with her instead. The ship starts through Earth's atmosphere, and it starts off somewhere in Asia, but this thing is supposed to be gigantic.
Yeah, it's like 3,000 miles or something.
Yeah, it's like 3,000 miles across or something like that.
And
so
I will cause gravity effects for 3,000 miles and
yep, that's how the song goes.
Yeah.
It's the sequel song.
Yeah.
So this is where I think things got a little odd. Because you remember, for those of you who remember the first movie, the ships arrive in basically clouds that kind of roll in.
Mm-hmm.
I think they wanted to do it one up on this one. And so you see it like on fire as it's like flying in.
Yeah, it just seemed odd to me.
Yeah. And so what's happening is as it's passing over everything, because it has its own gravitational pull. Mm-hmm. So as it's passing over everything, like buildings, people, water, ground, whatever, is being pulled up towards it. And as it goes past, it basically drops on the other side. And so everything in its path is getting sucked up and just dropped. And so there's a part that obviously at one point they're in London. Of course, the tugboat has been dragged along for all this.
Yeah.
So they are in London, and you see Big Ben get picked up and then dropped on the London Bridge.
Now, originally, this was supposed to be France.
Oh, it was?
Because of what happened during the time with all the terrorist attacks. They had to change it to London. So.
Which makes sense because there's a line later on. Well, here, I'll get to that. Levinson says, they like to get the landmarks.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah. Well,
haha. And then everything starts dropping. Jake is like, okay, we're descending. I'm going to try to get control of this. They're like, you mean we're falling? He's like, nope, I got control of this. So he manages to fly them away from it and gets free of the mothership.
No one has control in this movie.
He gets free of the mothership. And Jake says, did you pee your pants? To which David Levinson says, yeah. And Jake goes, yeah, me too. Like, all happy. I'm like, what is... Okay,
yeah,
great.
Yeah, okay.
Great
lines.
Sure. And then there's this, like, little bit after this where Marceau, the psychologist lady, she's French, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
They make sure you know that by her name and by the fact that she says many things in French throughout the movie. But then when they were like, are you okay? What's wrong? And she's like... My mother was in London.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha.
But it makes sense because if it was originally supposed to be France, that would make much more sense why her mother should have been in France.
Right.
In Paris or whatever. So, okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense then.
Yeah. So that kind of plot hole makes
a
little bit of sense.
They had to change it. Not that the French person couldn't be
in London. Not that any of this movie makes sense.
Yeah. So
There's a lot going on.
Yeah, so now we cut back to... We cut to story G for the first time.
Go ahead. Yeah. Story G.
So all of a sudden, we're at a salvage operation in the mid-Atlantic on this boat.
We're like 40, 50 minutes into this movie.
Yeah, we are 50 minutes
in. And that scene came up, and I said to you, too late. I don't want any new characters.
Correct.
I'm done.
We don't even think we learn these people's names.
We don't learn their names.
So
they're ship people. Ship people one, ship people two, whatever. Yes. I don't know their names.
So they're hunting for gold, and this... ship passes over, or like the alien ship passes over when this happens. And I was like, is this part of the story or not? Like,
right.
They just cut away from it after it passes over.
I honestly thought I accidentally hit the remote and we went to like normal television.
We went to the last ship.
I was like, oh, MeTV is showing Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. And then I realized, nope, I didn't hit the remote.
So now we cut to Julius Levinson, to Judd Hirsch.
Judd Hirsch.
And so he's...
We haven't seen him in 20 minutes, and now we see him again.
Well, yeah, he was on some sort of senior retirement center book tour, and now all of a sudden he's on a boat in the middle of the Atlantic.
The boat called Lucky Star.
He's not even on the coast. He's just, like, in the middle of the ocean.
What the...
Yeah, it makes no sense. So, so he calls his son, and it's like, hey, what's going on? You know, I'm out here on the coast, and David tells him, hey, you've got to try to get away. As he's trying to get away, this giant tidal wave starts coming up. And so we're like, uh-oh, what's going to happen to Judd Hirsch?
No, you were like, uh-oh. I was like, sure.
So I'm trying to keep it entertaining. So the ship is coming for the hospital, too.
Right.
But Jasmine, she's supposed to be there helping a new mother who had just given birth and they couldn't move her.
Mm-hmm.
So Jasmine and the new mother then are trying to scramble. And as they're coming up, the, like, I don't know, hovercopter that took everybody else away basically leaves without them.
Right.
And so...
Hey, come back.
So Dylan sees them in his jet and says, hey, you got to go back and get them. So they turn around to go get them. Jasmine helps the baby and the mother inside the hovercopter. And when she goes to climb in, the ground or the building crumbles below
shakes.
Her.
Yeah.
And so she's got a hold of their hand. And so Dylan's like, hold on, hold on. And she just falls. But they don't cut to it. They don't make it a dramatic moment.
I
actually had to rewind it to go, did she fall or not?
Did she die? Did she fall? Did she die?
I had to watch closely because, yeah, she falls, but it's very tiny.
So Vivica A. Fox has like three lines in this movie and then she falls and dies.
But they made her a doctor.
So they redeemed her enough to kill her.
But she saved a new mother and a baby, so that's important.
So there you go. She went out of here.
She did something. Yeah, she didn't go out like a punk in a test flight accident. Yeah. So now obviously all this is going on. Well, the tidal wave is still happening.
Yeah.
Now Judd Hirsch is like driving his boat down this tidal wave.
Right.
And like going over wreckage and whatever else.
Right.
So he
looks like a deleted scene from The Endless Summer. I mean, it's like the tidal waves and everything.
Yeah. It's like from The Day After Tomorrow.
Well, again, another Roland Emmerich movie. That's
so
terrible.
Basically, he surfs his little boat to safety. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So now we cut back to
Area 51. Dear John, safe.
Dear John, that sucked. So we cut back to Area 51.
I think he says, when he says, Sweet Moses.
Yeah, he goes, Sweet Moses.
Sweet Moses.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, we get you're Jewish. As he's eating an onion roll and counting his money.
Stop.
Come on.
Oh, my God.
Seriously. They stereotype him. They stereotype a lot of people in this movie.
They do. They really do.
Oh.
We go back to Area 51. Whitmore, he said that we have to interrogate the aliens. And so while they're trying to figure out how to do that, his solution is he walks in with one of them, or walks into this room, seals it, and releases one of them. that grabs him and starts talking through him like it did with Oaken in the first movie.
Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it says, she is coming, but doesn't say really what that necessarily means yet. So they attack it, and of course, shooting it from the front does nothing, like with their, for some reason, with their weapons.
Right.
So it does nothing. Dumbutu, who says, who again reiterates, you have to get it from behind, slides on. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Wording, phrasing.
I'm sorry. Who says,
you got to kill it from behind.
You got to get it from the rear.
Phrasing. Try again. Phrasing.
All right. Who, you have to stab it in the back.
Okay. Phrasing.
What? Wait, why is that one bad?
Okay. Well, okay. I'll give you that one.
So he slides between its legs.
Okay, phrasing. Try again.
So he slides between its legs.
Phrasing.
And plunges the shaft.
Well, this is a Roland Emmerich movie again.
So he slides under him and then stabs him with these like giant metal machetes,
mm-hmm.
which I think are almost, I think they're like made of the alien metal or something. They look kind of cool.
I didn't even know that.
I don't know, but they looked cool.
Yeah, no, that's
kind
cool.
of exotic looking.
Yeah,
so
it's cool.
So he stabs them in the back, and of course that kills it. And when it comes out of its little bio suit, he cuts its head off.
Mm-hmm.
And then does he see? I told you, you have to get it from behind.
Phrasing.
I know.
That's what she said.
Which should have, that would have been a great moment in the movie.
Right.
So now, at an hour in the movie,
oh my god,
storyline H emerges. So now we have a bunch of kids and a dog driving through flooded coastline
for no reason
with dialogue, not saying anything. So my theory was this was just setting up a Scooby-Doo franchise reboot.
Well, like when I say to you, I turn to you, I go, I swear they were just like, hey, what are your ideas? Write them down. We'll rip them up on a piece of paper and then we'll like pull them out of the hat. Right.
Yeah.
Oh, let's see what this next one is. Oh, four orphan kids and a dog and a car. Perfect. Write it. Go.
Do it. Yeah.
What, an hour into the movie? Perfect. That's when we should.
Do the kids even have names?
No. Kid one, kid two, kid three.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, I don't even remember hearing their names.
I don't care. No.
Anyway, as they're driving by through the flooded coastline, they find Judd Hirsch and save him. So that's how we get Judd Hirsch
back.
Yeah,
they see his book, so they know who he is, kind of.
Yeah, well, they
or they know his son.
Well, they take his book from the wreckage too, and they know his son. So, and I think like their story is like their parents were in Florida, so they're probably dead. And the one, the main girl who keeps doing everything, I just call her Daphne.
Daphne.
Her boyfriend is probably dead too, or is definitely dead, or whatever Daphne. It is.
She looks like a Fanning kid.
She does.
Doesn't she?
She does look like
a... She can we like, call her Daphne Fanning?
Yeah, if you
okay.
want to.
I want to.
Fanning? Anyway, the... So, Dr. Oaken tells... back at Area 51, Dr. Oaken tells everybody they need to open the artifact they found on the moon. Because he's kind of snapped to, and he's come out of his bed, and he says, we need to open this. So, while they're trying to figure that out... the mothership starts drilling into the Earth again. Of course, this time much faster.
Yeah.
And they want to... turns out they want to steal our core, or at least drill to the core. And what that'll do is it'll essentially kill our planet. It'll dissolve the atmosphere.
There's a lot going on in this movie.
Yeah. And so it's drilling down. But they took thermal imaging, and they're like, right there. There's where the queen is, and they have obviously like an alien sitting in the middle of the ship. Like, you just see her with your thermal imaging. The thing was on fire 20 seconds before, and somehow your thermal imaging is like spot on.
Boom, there she is.
So they were like, okay, President Lanford issues a retaliatory strike on them. So Jake encourages Dylan to lead them in this strike and to push through his mother's death. because, you know, they need a strong leader, and that's who he is. So they start using drones to take down the shields. So bombers can drop cold fusion bombs on where the queen is. And if anybody knows about bombs, it's Roland Emmerich.
Roland Emmerich. Anyway. He knows everything there is.
So, and of course, we have this beautifully delivered line. This is the 4th of July. Let's show them some fireworks. To which everybody cheers. Yeah, and we just groaned.
Sparklers.
So then we go back to story G. Sparklers. We can only defeat them with snakes.
We can only defeat them with the tank thing. With smoke balls. Right in the alien's eye.
So we cut back to story G with the treasure ship now. And the treasure ship, they're just getting drunk. And when they say why, they say, because it's the end of the world. Our gold is gone because of all this. So now we're just getting drunk. And the crewmate, who, by the way, only calls a captain. Captain doesn't say any other names.
Captain.
Because we didn't bother to name them.
Why would we?
He says they need a ship to monitor the alien progress on this, like them drilling into the ground. And since we have, like, sonar, we should be able to do that. And so they go, oh, yeah, tell them we'll do that for $100 million. And they all kind of laugh. And the guy goes to the phone and goes, actually, they said yes. And they go, yeah. Oh, and so they start snapping too.
There goes their budget. Their budget was $100 million, wasn't it?
Well, there you go. Movie? Yeah. And so, of course, you know, we don't need to dilly dally about how all of a sudden the sonar is no longer looking at, like, how it can tell that it's going subterranean,
yeah,
and towards the core. Like, what kind of sonar scanning stuff do you have that you can see to the planet's core?
I don't.
Anyway,
know. Yeah.
So the ILS, they are in formation and they're moving in for attack. So then we flip again. So now we've gone to the ship. Now we flip back to Area 51.
Wait, where are we? Where are we?
Now we're at Area 51.
No, go back. Did we flip over here? Wait,
we're in the ocean.
No, we're in the ocean?
We were in the ocean.
Okay, but
now we're at the ship.
Now we're at the ship? Where's Judd Hirsch?
He's
with the
on
kids.
The road.
He's just
with the kids.
Giving him morals.
Yeah, okay. he's old.
Oh my god, I'm so confused. Okay, kids. Keep going. Go. Just go.
So they're at the ship. The ILS moves in for attack. Back at Area 51, Dr. Oaken tries to get into the artifact.
Oh.
Back to the ship.
Oh.
The mothership opens fire on the ILS. Then it unleashes a bunch of fighters. So, of course, this time we're more evenly matched than we were in 1996.
This is more hot flashes than Cela Ward.
Jake says they can't get to the top of the ship because it's too heavily fortified, so they need to get inside. So they fly into this, like, exhaust port or whatever the hell ever on the mothership, and they go inside. The president wakes up and says, she knows they're coming. It's a trap! And so, of course, before Patty can run down there and warn them, the mothership releases, like, an EMP inside of itself that disables the fighters, and so they're just falling. Then it sends out some crazy things to go onto the bombs they had with them, basically, which detonates it inside of these force fields so it doesn't hurt anything else. And so the plan is basically foiled. And they surmise that the queen has lured them in.
What did you call it? Beyonce? The queen bee?
No.
Queen bee alien?
The queen lures them in to...
Jeff Goldblum calls, oh, she baited us.
Yeah, she baited us.
Oh, she's a masturbator.
She's a masturbator.
Shebop.
Oaken busts out what's called the Oaken laser to cut into the artifacts. We just have this, like, goofy Brent Spiner moments happening.
Mm-hmm.
That's what... So,
What are you talking about, the Judd Hirsch and the kids?
Oh, well, their ship shows up. So, oh, the mothership puts a shield around the Earth.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And destroys all of the satellites while it's doing that. And then a ship touches down at Cheyenne Mountain, where the president and, like, all the cabinet is.
Yeah, and that's what happens. Boy, God, this just, it's so hard to keep it. Yeah,
and what's it, like, Cela Ward basically is like, for freedom.
For freedom.
Or something like that.
We'll do it for freedom.
Yeah, she yells something else. Yeah. The battle is whatever.
The battle's for freedom.
Yeah, and she yells something stupid.
She turns into Matt Dillon.
Yeah.
Or Matt Dillon and the Outsiders. We'll do it for Johnny.
Yeah.
We'll do it for freedom.
And so then it just cuts away from them. And so we don't know what happened.
Yeah. We assume that she's dead. I mean, we know that she is.
Because then we assume she's dead. And because
the cabinets.
Some cabinet people members. Show up to the general, General Adams. They say, hey, look, we assume the president is dead. So we are going to swear you in as president because you're the next top whatever we can find.
Sure.
And so they swear him in. So now he is President Adams. Now we cut back.
Wait, we've already had a President Adams. We've had two of them.
We've had multiple President Adams.
Anyway, go ahead.
So we cut to back to the Scooby-Doo gang.
Oh, my God.
Who is talking about everybody they lost. Daphne starts to cry, so Judd Hirsch offers to take over the driving for her.
Right. But they're running out of gas, too. We're running out of gas. It's like 70 miles away from...
No, we're almost there.
Oh, sorry. God.
No, they've been going forever on this tank of gas. So, because keep in mind, they're going from the coast.
Yeah, right.
And now they're like in the middle of America in like a day.
Right.
Like less than a day, in hours time. So, and you know, I'm gonna touch on that for a second. Because I see this in television shows, and I see this everywhere. People who think are from a coast, and they're writing about how, like, easily... Think about, like, on the East Coast, you can get pretty quickly from one state to another.
Right.
I think people underestimate how big, like, the Western states are. The like, Midwestern and Western states. That you can't just drive for 3 hours and
Correct.
Be across, like, 15
right.
states. So when they're like, well, clearly we'd be halfway across America. We drove for 4 hours.
And don't forget about the biggest state in the United States that Roland Emmerich is portraying in this movie. And that's the state of confusion. That's the biggest state of it all.
The all-encompassing
one. Because I'm confused, but I was confused a lot. We were flashing over here, flashing over here, flashing over there.
So, and speaking of flashing, so we go back to See Area 51.
Oh, okay.
No. And David starts feeling guilty because he didn't do enough to prepare them. Whitmore says to look how far we've come as a world and not to give up. We prepared.
He does a mini
better
speech.
Than we would have. Yeah, and he does like a nice speech. Bill Pullman has a good
speech.
It's
not nice. It's just a generic speech.
Yeah, it is generic.
It's 2.0.
But coming from Bill Pullman, it sounds pretty decent.
Well, it's Bill Pullman.
Yeah, he's good at that.
Not Bill Paxton. It's Bill Pullman.
Yes.
I think. Rest in peace.
Are we?
What?
Unforgettable actor, Bill Pullman. Or what am I, Bill Paxton?
No, it's Bill Pullman.
No, I'm Bill Pullman. Yeah. So Dumbuntu reads some of their language from the aliens. Again, we established that earlier. And it refers to the artifact as the enemy. The artifact opens and a giant white ball emerges. So the remaining pilots, we cut back to them inside the mothership. They're fighting for survival, so they're all firing and taking down aliens in there. Now we flash back to Area 51, where Floyd the accountant touches the orb with his bare hands. And they're like, don't do that. What's wrong with you? It's an alien right. thing. And his hands sink inside of it. When it does that, it wakes up and... You know, starts translating the language.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, when it does that, it also alerts the mothership to where the position is. So we see the queen suiting up and her ship separating off from the main mothership piece. So the orb starts talking to the group, calling us primitive. Apparently, it's come to save us. It's the mothership is harvesting the molten core to refuel its ship. And it's done this for millions of other worlds across the universe. And there's more queens than just this one.
Oh, honey, there's a bunch of queens. There's one that directed this movie.
So this orb was one of those worlds that got taken over. It was like the lone survivor of one of those worlds.
Right.
Where they gave up their physical form and became digital. So it says it's going to take – it takes survivors from all these worlds and moves them to this hidden world where they can work together and compile their knowledge and information.
Right. And then they film them and then make a reality show where they vote each of them off the planet.
Exactly right.
Like Survivor. No?
Exactly right.
No?
Yeah.
Okay.
Where they work together on technology that they can eventually use to destroy the harvesters.
Right.
So this part, there's like a neat little piece of mythology they just inserted in here.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
I
wanted more of it.
Right.
Right.
And so the orb is like, well, it would all be cool, but now it sucks because since I was activated, the queen's going to know where I am. And also, if it gets a hold of me, it's going to know where this refugee world is and take all of them out, too. So they determine that using the sphere's radio frequency, they can bait the queen to go out to the salt flats, and they can drop their cold fusion bombs on her there. So they'll use the base shields to keep her in place so that not everybody else will get hit by the fusion bombs either. But that'll leave the base open, leave it exposed to attack by the main alien forces.
And I'm all about the base. About the base. No trouble.
No trouble. So, we go back to the treasure ship, which somehow has the technology to look all the way to the core of the Earth, and realizes they don't have 7 hours like they thought they did.
Oh, no.
They only have an hour.
Oh, no, we miscalculated because we were drunk.
Because we didn't know how to calculate because we are gold salvaging operation. Because
we're gold salvage people.
So they ask for, and so we're done with them all of a sudden then too. They ask for a volunteer to pilot the ship with the decoy signal on it that'll have the bombs in it.
Mm-hmm.
So a freshly shaved President Whitmore volunteers. And he's
freshly
all,
shaved?
Yeah, he's all together.
He fits that like to a T, that flight suit.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, how that fit you so good.
You were poured into that flight suit, President Whitmore.
Highway to the danger zone.
And of course, Patty is saying no. She doesn't want him to go, and he says, I gotta. And his bodyguard, she's trying to beg the bodyguard to keep him on the ground. Doesn't want him flying out to go, you know, deliver the decoy. And we cut back to the Scooby-Doo gang.
Yeah, this is my favorite.
And Old Man Dithers. And they come to a school bus full of abandoned children.
Yeah, you know.
And they're that's like, perfect. What's going on? They said, well, our
well, they're running
driver,
out of gas. They need, like, you know.
Yeah, they need some gas. And so they pull over. They're like, you know, what's happening? Well, their bus driver just left them because he wanted to go a different direction so they could go
hook up. He wanted to go to, like, Minnesota?
Yeah, so he could hook up with his girlfriend one last time or whatever.
Sure. She lives in Mankato.
Yeah. And
she'll be a character later on, probably.
Yeah, probably. In the third
Jesus.
One. So
I actually call this the magic Jewish school bus because then Judd Hirsch.
The shul bus?
The shul bus. It's the shul bus.
So,
get on, everyone.
The shmuel bus? So anyway.
I'll teach him morals.
So, okay, so it has almost a full tank of gas. So Julius takes charge of all the kids and loads.
Well, these kids are like from a camp. I think it's from Camp Daddy Daycare.
Yeah,
I think they're the kids from Daddy Daycare.
It is. Cuba Gooding Jr. left them to go hook up one last time. With he took his snow dogs to take him up there. Anyway, so we go back to the pilots inside the mothership who go to get some fighters, some unguarded fighters. But in order to do that, Jake runs up and starts distracting them in the alien control tower.
Yeah, like he flips them off and pees on
the ship and everything, yeah.
Because he really did have to pee.
Yeah, he did. He didn't pee his pants earlier like we assumed. He's staying very well hydrated, too.
Well hydrated.
So alien troops go after them, but the other pilots who now have stolen the ships basically mow through the soldiers. So, Ray, I think is his name, his friend's name, maybe? Flies back to save Dylan and Jake, who are running from other fighters, because they're like, hey, we're not leaving anybody behind.
I think his name is Ray.
Yeah.
No.
Ray, that's what it was.
But it only took us an hour after the movie to realize his name is Ray.
Yeah. And so they all get out of there. So now General President Adams gives a speech about the human spirit while President Whitmore escapes and gets in the decoy.
It's very inclusive. It's a very generic, inclusive speech. No matter where you're from, we are all in this together.
Yeah. Yes, that's exactly. It.
And then he breaks out of prison because he was on prison break.
Yeah,
there you go. I was just trying to think of something else. I saw him.
So they take off. A battle breaks out at the base because the fighters, the alien fighters, are all coming for them. So they send out the decoy, and it seems to be working. So it kind of pulls the mothership away, and it's following after this decoy ship.
Yeah, so it's working.
Yeah.
So they're now becoming the baiters, or the masturbators.
The masturbators. And there's nothing Bill Pullman does better than masturbating. While you were masturbating? It's a sequel that didn't
quite make it.
Did not come out quite as like we thought.
Well, I'm sure it came out, but it was just something else.
So Dr. Oaken, in the meantime, reactivates the orb to learn more from it, which in a pointless move. I think we just had to make sure that he was in the room, because he goes into the room and they lock it behind him and seal it off so that the queen can't detect where it is.
I mean.
And he starts looking through it and seeing that there's all these weapons and all this information they have about, you know, that they could use. Meantime, and I did put the magic school bus.
Shul bus.
The shul bus.
The shul bus.
Pulls up, is driving, and David's like, oh, no, it's going to be in the attack area. So he signals it to come over and get out of the way. And, of course, when it shows up, he's like, Dad? Because, of course... Right. He's driven all the way across the country in the matter of hours.
Yeah.
And has a bus full of children.
Look, Jews know how to do it.
Yeah.
They know how to get to their destination.
Yeah. You know, he seemed to take a pretty direct route. No wandering for 40 years for him. So they put up the shields around the ship. President Whitmore blows the Queen's ship up.
Yay. And...
But then they go, and so it does it. You just see it, like, come apart.
Yay, we're done, right?
But then they're like, oh, no, the fighters are still coming. Yeah. Why are the fighters still coming? That should have put them down.
That should have made this movie end.
Yes. Part of the base collapses in the attack, and some of the aliens get loose. And basically they're like, okay, we need to secure the sphere. So they put some Dabutu and Floyd... the accountant, arm up, and they're going to go try to stop these aliens and secure the sphere.
Bahutu?
Dabutu?
Dabutu?
Yeah.
Dabutu and Floyd? They're my favorite cop show.
Yeah, right. Dabutu and Floyd.
Coming this fall to ABC.
So, you cut back to the kids who are now all crowded around David. And I think the kid is taking a selfie, and he goes, hey, what is that? And you see on the Queen's mothership, part of it is kind of moving. And all of a sudden, this giant Queen alien busts out of it. And I call her Beyonce.
Yeah, no.
Because she's the Queen.
She's a Queen Bee.
There ain't none bigger. So she Beyonce. So, all the single aliens? Anyway, but the queen apparently had her own shield. Boo. So she The queen has her own shield.
If you like it, then you should put a shield around it. If you like it, then that's better.
Yes, that's
a better joke.
That's better. Thank you. It's okay. So she's going after the school bus. So the kids all load onto the school bus. But oh no, Scooby is still outside. So Daphne runs out to get him and runs back on there. So they lose some time.
Zoinks.
Yeah. So
what I hate is the fact that, like, the queen bee has a shield around her.
Yeah.
Like, she's, like, come
but,
on.
But you know what? When you up your game, that's just like video games, too. No. Like, there's the final boss battle, and then there's, like, the real final boss battle.
Whatever.
So Beyonce is, like, 300 feet tall. Actually, it's variable. Depending upon, like, perspective and part of the movie, it seems like it changes size.
Yeah.
But it's, like, 300 feet tall-ish. And whipping planes out of the air with its, like, tendrils, but it can't seem to catch a school bus from the 70s. So.
Yeah, I didn't even think of that.
Yeah. So, Patty's fighter, finally Patty gets up to it and starts firing on it, and it takes down the shield. Like, she gets enough direct hits, she takes down the shield. And then Dylan and Jake show up in the other fighters and are fighting her. So they're saying, hey, don't open fire on us. We are, you know, we're the good guys. So the queen figures out about the orb due to her psychic link. So all of a sudden she sends all of her fighters after it and forms the fighter tornado.
Yes.
They all start flying in a circle, basically making a shield around her while she's trying to get this thing. So the aliens rush to the orb, firing at Dr. Oaken and his partner. Floyd and Dumbutu fight them off. And then they get up there like, I think we're okay. But turns out Dr. Oaken's partner is shot.
Do we even know his name?
I think it's in there somewhere, but I can't remember what it is. So his partner dies, and they have this really awkward final exchange. And so then Floyd, Dumbutu, and Oaken hold off the remaining aliens. And, of course, Oaken is going insane because, his partner got killed. The ship tornado that's happening, we use the logic of, hey, you know what every tornado has? An eye. I was like, I think that's
a hurricane.
More hurricanes, but tornadoes probably have an eye, but it's not like our...
This is the same guy that directed Day After Tomorrow, so he knows everything about the weather.
Well, yeah. So they break free from the ship tornado by firing up their like boosters, their fusion engines,
mm-hmm.
and they go so fast that they break free from it.
Mm-hmm.
So they prepare to make this final run on Beyonce.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just checking my pulse to see if I'm still alive.
We're almost there. Beyonce breaks into Area 51.
Beyonce.
And, like, rips the top off the building and grabs the orb and starts running away. So the pilots start opening fire on her back. And they say, the back is the weak point. Because we've made sure to hammer that into your head.
Yeah, I'm thinking everything's a weak point in this movie.
So they hit her enough, and they break through her armor, and there's an explosion. And then we see the queen trying to crawl free of the armor, and she dies. And, of course, alien slop falls all over the school bus, and it uses its little wipers to wipe the windshields because
it's
adorable.
Isn't that adorable on the school bus?
Yeah. And then everybody starts making out.
There's spookish everywhere.
Everybody starts making out in celebration. Like, Jake and Patty make out. And then, like, David and that Marceau, the psychologist lady, they make out.
Yeah.
To which Jed Hirsch is like, oh, so this is a girl in your life.
Who is this?
Yeah, and so.
I don't know who she is.
Neither
do we.
I thought his wife lived in the first one, or his ex-wife.
That's what, yeah. I thought so, too.
Stalker Channing?
I thought it was Stalker Channing, wasn't it?
Yeah, because she worked with the president.
Yeah.
I thought she lived, because she and Vivica
A.
She
was married
Fox
to the president. Wait, that's West Wing. That's a better thing. Okay.
Dumbutu, for no reason, says to the accountant that he has the heart of a warrior.
Yeah, for no reason.
Yeah.
No, you don't.
But
Okay, but the accountant was one of the writers.
Oh, so he wrote that.
Yeah, he was totally...
To make himself look okay.
Yeah, he gave himself lots of goofy... He was the humor. He made himself the humor lines.
It didn't work, though.
No, it was terrible.
Probably because they needed an actor for that, not a writer.
Not just somebody who can talk like they're smarmy, whatever. So then the rest of the alien ship leaves, which is always a good thing, is when you just let the ship leave.
Why not?
Probably should have tried to bring it down somewhere. Or, like, maybe not bring it down on the Earth, but at least follow it into space.
Well, then we
can't
set up for the third movie, right. Jeremy. Come on.
Now, David Levinson says, that he doesn't know if they're going to survive another attack, or Earth could survive another attack.
Or another movie.
Dr. Oaken says, wait, because the orb had said, you know, you people are fantastic. Like, you are remarkable. So it turns out the orb wants us to lead the resistance against these aliens. They have all the technology that they put together, and we're too primitive for that.
Mm-hmm.
But as tacticians, we're great. And so they want us to lead the battle against the aliens.
Oh, okay.
And say that there's an interstellar battle that's coming.
And the last line of the movie?
Well, President Adams says, that's great. We'll take the fight to them. And Oaken says, we're going to kick some serious alien ass.
Directed by Roland Emmerich.
Yep. End.
Credits.
You've been deuced. Oh, God.
I don't know.
I've been reduced
and
to tears.
I'm so sorry, Jeremy, that you had to read all that. That's crazy. I apologize.
Yeah, it's pretty painful.
Yeah. And I apologize to our listeners that, hey, we made it through this, though. So, you know, that's what we thought of it, right?
Yeah.
But let's hear what other people thought of it, okay?
Yeah, let's.
Bravo Tango Mike gives it a 7 out of 10. And by the way, this was the highest I could find.
7 out of 10 was the highest you could find?
I could find on, on IMDb. It says, a worthy sequel. Independence Day is one of my favorite movies. I just enjoy watching it and have seen it multiple times. Why are sequels made? To make more money, of course. Was this sequel necessary? No. However, I feel it was much better than the awful reviews. It would have been nice to have Will Smith in the movie. Jeff Goldblum's David was a bit too serious in this movie. And by the way, why don't they tell you what happened to his ex-wife, who was such a prominent character in the original, which is what we talked about? It was nice to have Dr. Oaken back. Of course, people who have been lying in bed for 20 years do not jump right out of bed.
Yes, exactly.
The Warlord character was a great addition to the story, and I think Liam Hemsworth did pretty good as Jake. Mm-hmm. The CGI was really good. Overall, an entertaining movie and a worthy sequel. I'm looking forward to the next movie where we go into space and kick some alien booty. That was a 7 out of 10, and that was still critical.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, ugh.
I want to go back. There's one thing I forgot to tell everybody. I just was reminded of it when he said Will Smith and like was talking about the old movie.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that part where Will Smith hits the alien and knocks it out?
Yeah.
Dylan does that when they're in the mothership. He punches one of the aliens and it doesn't go down. Mm-hmm. It obviously just pisses it off. And I was like, oh, I get it. Like in the first movie. And it's kind of like a play on that.
No.
So
I think it got lost because I was just like, whatever.
Yeah.
So, Mick Raisin says a 1 out of 10. I can't believe I paid $8 for this movie. There was no one redeeming quality to this movie. In fact, the producers should be forced to refund our money. No chemistry, no humor, not one good scene. Rather, we spent the ride home listing the top 10 worst scenes only to realize we needed top 100. There are multiple disjointed scenes where the scriptwriter obviously was not concerned. For example, in the opening scenes, we were told of a world of peace where there had been no wars for 20 years. A couple of scenes were treated to the scene where a warlord is introduced, or apparently anything but peaceful. Bill Pullman needs a cane at the beginning of the movie. Near the end, he's a Top Gun pilot willing to sacrifice his life to deliver the package. The list could go on. This was really bad. Do not waste your time. I was prepared for a meaty core film with a mildly entertaining, but rather received a movie that was beyond bad. If you feel like you must see this, wait a year and go pick it up a discount copy in a reduced bin at Walmart. You have been warned. Ooh, that's 1 out of 10.
Yeah, I mean, of course this movie's mediocre, but a few things that I hate when people are like, I want my money back.
Yeah, I'm kind of like that too. You went in, you wanted to watch it for a reason.
Right, you go see a movie, you take a gamble when
you
see that movie.
Yeah, you take a gamble.
Based off of what you see. Yeah. And you took a gamble and you lost.
Yeah.
Suck it up, Buttercup.
Right.
But also, I think
plus,
some of the
you wanted to go. You the, part of that person wanted to go see that movie.
Yeah. But you know what? I think of things like where he's talking about, like, there was no explanation why suddenly he didn't need a cane anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, they kind of explained it because he was also nuts at the beginning. And after, like, the psychic stuff went away, then he was back to normal. Like, it was, like, after he got gripped by the alien and it fused, like, his mind touched it.
No, I totally agree with you.
So I think that was, the cane went away then, too, because it showed, it basically stripped that whatever was wrong with him away.
Right.
And so I got
that. Having said that, I think that, yeah, there's plot holes in there, and maybe that it didn't live up to where, you know, it came out to be. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
But having said that, that doesn't mean there wasn't an explanation for it. Sometimes there wasn't. Sometimes there was. Maybe the explanation wasn't good enough.
Yeah, I agree.
You know what I mean?
I agree.
Or it wasn't executed to the point where it should have been.
Yeah, or where it was, like, very obvious.
Where it was very obvious. Yeah. Having said that, that doesn't mean that there wasn't on certain occasions in this movie. There are some plot holes in this movie.
Oh, God,
don't get me wrong. There is. It's conjointed. It's layered to the point where it doesn't need to be layered.
Yeah.
Roland Emmerich movies are very, like, keep it simple, but he doesn't keep it simple at all.
No.
He just puts too much in. There's too many characters in this, too.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. So we always try to stay positive.
Sure.
And
I think we're doing fine.
Something out that we can enjoy. That being said, what do you think was the best part of this movie? For you?
For me, the mythology that the other alien ship, the one that was our ally,
the orb thing,
the kind of the mythology that it was getting to, I kind of liked that aspect of it. I really did. I thought they could have gone with that a little bit more. And I thought, like, I wanted more of the warlord. I thought the warlord was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I like that aspect that there's this kind of, in a way, a vigilante of the aliens that's like, I'm just going to go savage and go crazy when an alien's around. I kind of like that because we don't have that in the first film. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't think, if I remember correctly, I don't think we do. So I kind of like that. But I feel like we should have built that and maybe have more of an outline of, like, maybe the aliens coming down and, like, there's more fights that are more hands-on to get that character more screen time.
Yeah, I agree. I think that'd have been cooler.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's then that person where they were talking about there was no human conflict, then there was that.
Right.
They weren't fighting other people. They've been fighting aliens for 10 years.
Right.
And so, yeah, I'm with you. I think I kind of wanted more story around that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think there's something cool. It actually reminded me a lot of Black Panther in the comics.
Okay.
Because they have, they still have this, like, tribal, kind of tribal culture, but also still have, like, these super advanced weapons. And so that's what it kind of reminded me of. So I did want to see more of that. And I thought the character was pretty honorable. He was pretty cool.
Right.
Yeah. Like, I liked that. It was interesting.
Right.
I think for me, I did like the mythology with the orb. I thought that was great. I was very intrigued by that.
I was more intrigued by that and going, hey, let's talk about that more.
Well, it's the first time we've seen another alien with it. And, you know, it's like, oh, my gosh. Like, I'm kind of interested in what other kind of aliens there
would
have been.
It's like anything new that was brought to the table, I was like, okay.
Yeah.
I'll give that, except, like, the kids in the school bus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I did like seeing, like, the adapted technology stuff. And the reason is this, because there is this cheap trick that they do with a lot of movies where they're like, oh, we've had aliens since the Roswell crash, and we've been, you know, updating our technology with it ever since. That's how you have a smartphone, or that's how you have whatever.
Right.
Like, they basically treat it like where we are currently is thanks to those technological leaps, right? But this actually said,
In 1996, we got this extra technology, and by 2016, here's how things have evolved. So it, you clearly still recognize, hey, that looks like a helicopter, but instead of having rotors, it, like, hovers. Or, you know, instead of having just a regular jet, you have a jet that also can go up into space and has, you know, the ability to hover or, like, do these different things. And we have our guns are more like laser kind of a thing.
Right. It felt like the technology wasn't so far advanced that we're like, wow.
It wasn't
look
so
at all
far
this.
Advanced that it was
but it was
unrecognizable.
Enough to where it was, yeah.
Yeah.
Where it was recognizable.
Yeah, it was still recognizable, but well, obviously it was advanced. And I kind of enjoyed that. Yeah. I thought that that was, it wasn't too out of the realm of belief for me.
But also, you could have put that throughout the movie and said, hey, now we're going to go on this, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, had more advances in your...
I think they forgot about it sometimes, honestly.
I think they forgot about a lot of things in this movie.
I think they did it for visual appeal and right. for some story advancement, but it would have been nice to see a little bit of other interesting things like
right.
that. But
go ahead.
You know, and I did like, as cheesy as the freaking ending was, I do like where it has the thing about, hey, look, you aren't going to be able to, you know, contribute technology or contribute these other things, but what you can do is contribute tactically, because, you know, as humans, our fighting spirit and our tactics are better than what the others had. And so I kind of liked that was our contribution, and that happens in comics and other things.
Mm-hmm.
So I was glad to see that. I was okay. Moving on, reboot, continue, or cancel?
Oh, God. Part of me says cancel, but part of me is like, I just want someone else to helm this and not Roland Emmerich.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Hmm.
To see what we could do with this movie, with the mythology and you know, the alien, like the different alien races and stuff like that. Like, I think it could have legs, but based on this movie, I say cancel.
Okay. So, as it is right now, Roland Emmerich is tied to direct a third one, a rumored third one. Roland Emmerich has a bunch of things he's attached to that probably will never see the light of day.
Okay. Hopefully, this is one of them.
Yeah. So, if Roland Emmerich directs it, cancel. What if he doesn't?
What do you mean? What if he doesn't? Someone else does?
If he's not the director or writer or whatever, would you be interested?
Probably. It just depends on who it was.
Yeah.
So, what do you say?
I put, well, I'm tempted to see what kind of space opera could emerge
right.
from this. Because I think it could be great.
Right.
I can't take that chance.
Yeah.
So I'm
see, that's what I say.
It.
Like, the same thing. I'm like, I don't know if I could, though. Just based on this movie alone, I say cancel.
Yeah. Does it stand on its own?
No, this movie does not stand on its own. There's a lot that... No, and I say that on the aspect of just the movie itself. The movie itself is very like, here's story A, here's story B, here's story C. Hey, it's 50 minutes into the movie. Here's some more characters. It just doesn't go for me.
Well, I mean, I don't think it stands very well just in its entirety, but does it stand independently of the first movie well enough?
No, I think no.
You think it's based on a lot of the first movie's knowledge?
Yes. Yeah, I think there's a lot because the characters themselves, I'm like... You have to go, okay, that's his daughter. That's her son.
Yeah.
That's the uncle. I don't think it does.
See, I thought it did stand independently enough from the first one. Like, I think you could understand who people are, maybe except for Oaken. I think you could understand.
That's what I mean, the Oaken thing.
I feel like they shoehorned him in at some point.
Yeah, well, that's why I say no.
Yeah, I feel like for the most part, it could... Now, that doesn't mean it's not weak. I think it's really weak.
Oh, it's very weak.
But I do think it stands independently of the first one. I just think its entirety, it's a weak film.
Okay.
Does it make you want to watch the first one?
You go first.
I don't know.
Yeah, it
mostly,
is kind of like an I don't
mostly
know.
Mostly, I can't... This is... Well, I'm too busy thinking about how I'd rather slap the shit out of whoever greenlit this movie than about whether I'd go back and watch the first one.
I think, yeah.
Actually, no.
No, I'm an I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like I want to because of the nostalgia aspect in the Will Smith aspect, but really I don't want to because here's the bottom line, and it's going to really make some listeners mad. Independence Day, the first movie, is not a really good movie. No. You go back and rewatch that, it's not really that good to begin with.
I don't think it's as good as people remember.
I think it the special effects were kind of where people went, wow, that's crazy. And we see that a lot more now with disaster films and everything.
Yeah.
But it's been done so much that I say no.
Yeah, and it's really a
hard debate, but it's really, I don't know if I really want to.
I know there's people who enjoy this film, but I really think a lot of that is because it was for its time. I mean, we're talking about the era of before the era of Michael Bay bublosions.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. We were like, okay.
And that's not to disregard that movie. There's fun parts of that movie.
Yeah.
There's good parts of that movie, but there are some really bad parts of the first one, too.
Very true. And finally, sum your experience up in two words.
Oy vey.
Oy vey.
Yeah, because I do not like this movie.
Yeah.
Oy vey. I kept just going, ugh, really? Here we go again.
You really did.
Yeah, no, it was oy vey for me because it was like, okay, for 5 minutes we'll focus on these people. For 5 minutes we'll focus on these people. For 2 minutes now we got these people. For 1 minute now we got this person over here. No, we're going to go over here. No, Judd Hirsch over here.
It's like such a short attention span thing. There was a couple times where I was like, just show the whole freaking scene.
Yeah.
Instead of like, I went back and forth and back and forth and there's no purpose for me to go back and forth. Right. But I continue to like quick cut between storylines.
I feel like they filmed this part, they filmed this part, and then they're like, let's just cut and paste and do,
yeah,
here we go.
Yeah. I also feel like, I remember the story about like when they built the Transcontinental Railroad, and they took the two lines and they built them, and then they didn't match up exactly,
yeah,
so they had to, yeah, like move them. That's what I feel like happened. I feel like four people wrote this movie. There are sections of it.
No.
And then they were like, here's what I think should happen. And they went, oh, we got to figure out how to make these meet, like, attach.
So your two words?
Emmerich sucks.
Yeah, Emmerich sucks.
Yeah, I'm sorry, man.
Go down the list of Emmerich movies. What do you got? Like, The Day After Tomorrow?
Yeah,
Godzilla?
Godzilla.
2012? These are just, I'm sorry. I don't know who greenlits this guy to make movies. Why are they like, yeah, let's do it? But I guess Michael Bay makes movies.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. I think bottom line is we just say, folks, skip this movie.
Yeah.
Do it. Skip this movie.
Okay, we're Roland Emmerich with Stonewall.
Oh, Stonewall.
Where his imaginary white boy comes in and saves everything.
That's what he does, though. There's White a House lot of these Down? Movies. It feels like he's like, I feel like he's slowly reading history books, and he just goes, God. Oh, I only know that part of history.
Yeah.
So I don't care. I'm just going to like film that part of history and go, boom. There you go. Go ahead.
So really he picks up with, so there's Universal Soldier, Stargate, Independence Day, Godzilla, The Patriot with Mel Gibson.
Which people love that.
Yeah.
I know people that love that movie.
Yeah. I did.
We could have done that movie, Patriot. Yeah,
The Patriot?
Yeah.
Not a sequel, but sure.
Oh, yeah. It's not a sequel. Sorry. Patriot 2. Patriot
Games. The Day After Tomorrow.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to do any other movie besides this movie.
10,000 BC? 2012?
Yeah, that's a terrible movie. Okay, these are just terrible movies. I don't know why he makes movies. But
Anonymous?
It aggravates me.
That was a White House Down.
So we say skip this.
Yeah,
I even say skip. As much as people are going to get pissed at me, don't even watch the first one.
Nope.
Like, live the fact that you watched it in 1996 when you were younger.
Yeah.
And don't go back. Because I just think that this nostalgia thing that happens, I think sometimes you need to let stuff alone. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So bottom line is we say skip this, right?
Yep, I say skip it.
We thank you for joining us for this episode of The Deuce. Where can you find us, Jeremy?
So you can find us at thedeucepodcast.podbean.com.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yes.
On Stitcher.
Oh, yes.
Oh. On iTunes.
Oh, yes.
On Google Play.
On Google Play.
Or go to our Facebook page to subscribe, and you can see all our posts and new updates.
I meant to say this at the beginning. If you do want to watch Independence Day Resurgence, you can watch it on HBO Go. I forgot to say this at the beginning.
HBO Now.
If you want to rent it, it's $14.99 still to rent. Or I think maybe it's a little less. I saw that it was $12.99.
On Amazon streaming it was. Yeah.
It was, yeah, it's pretty expensive to watch something that's pretty shitty.
They
so.
Gotta recoup that money.
So we'll leave you at that, and remember, the sequel is king.